John, I am holding in my hot little hands a brand new copy of the Adults LP, made in the EU. But it's.
Have you got the vinyl?
I've got a vinyl. Warners were good enough to give us the vinyl to give away last week, which was a hot ticket, I must say.
Nice. Yeah, I was so stoked when that turned up. It was like, it looks and sounds exactly like what I wanted it to. And I was very, very happy. Very, very happy with the way it turned out.
Now you've enlisted the help of Devon from Pacific Heights and most famously Shapeshifter to help with the production on this. How did that come about, and what did that mean for this record?
Okay, so basically, just to give you a bit of a backstory, I'm basically getting married in 2014. I'm getting married to my wife, who's Sudanese, in Khartoum, and on day three of that. Of the wedding, is a 3-day affair. It's an all-female day, except for me, where my wife performs this dance, traditional Sudanese bridal dance called a sulpia, and I'm in a room with 300 other females and standing on stage, and the music that's accompanying that dance is called Aghani al Banat, which literally translates to girls' songs, and I was freaking out basically beforehand, going, what if I can't dance to this? I'm going to look like such a plonker. And then in front of these people that I don't know, as soon as I heard the music, I was like, oh my God, this sounds like, to me it was reminiscent of standing at a big day out boiler room for the gigs and just hearing all this dance music. Like, it was just organic dance music made by 7 or 8 older females hitting, things like DeLucas and, pumpkin skins that were dried and floating in bars of water.
Yeah, I've seen the RNZ video where they're hitting the things floating in water.
Totally, yeah. And I was just like, this music is amazing. And I just instantly went, oh, I've got to record with these guys. So basically, I went back a year later. We recorded some stuff on, just when they come around to the house and they were doing sort of auditions and stuff like that. I recorded it on my iPhone, and just so that I had a sort of reference for it, and with the intention of going into a professional studio. But when I did go into a professional studio with these guys, I found out that that is not a traditionally recorded form of music. Mm-hmm. So they were uncomfortable in the studio. The studio people were uncomfortable having Aghani al Banat players in there, because there's a whole cultural and class system thing going on where they're considered sort of working class or lower class, and not sort of a recorded form of music, which to me, I say bollocks. It's just amazing music and I wanted to hear it. And but that's just from an outside perspective. So anyway, the original recording on my iPhone, where they were totally unguarded and just dying for it, the performances were on fire, and that's what you hear on the album. The only problem with that is they're just like mono files, compressed digital files from an iPhone. So, and I was like, man, this music sounds like it should be heard through a big PA in a sort of boiler room dance sort of tent situation at a festival. How do I get that happening? Well, I knew Devon, made big sounding electronic records, and he was a mate. So I was like, this is what I've done. Do you reckon you can work with that? And he was like, challenging, but yes.
Now, it is quite interesting. So the music that you're referencing or talking about, you just said that it's obviously not often recorded. So you only had a limited window or small little snapshot to actually see the entire idea from. Because it doesn't sound like there'd be too much floating around in the public sphere.
There isn't. And, it does come from, like, the thing is, I've ended up doing a master's at Massey University on this form of music, just purely because I needed to understand it more. I needed to understand why there was these sort of certain, societal sort of contradictions about, I'm married into sort of the educated sort of bureaucrat class. Which is where my wife comes from, and so we were really honoured to have these performers play at our wedding. Yet I got the feeling that Dana, my wife, had asked her mother, that, you know, told her mother that she was going to dedicate her life to playing that form of music, her mother would be like, no way. And that was because the roots of that music come from the ghettos in Khartoum and the big urban centres of Sudan. After the British colonised Sudan in the 1900s, and they abolished slavery. So all those people are basically, that music comes from an ex-slave class, or working class, or lower class. And because Sudan's, just the way it's structured, you know, from a societal point of view, it's very, it's all about outward appearance. So if you play that music, it's basically telling the rest of society that you're from a lower class.
Okay.
So it's crazy. So because I'm going, wow, they're sort of like showering these people with money and going, wow, we're so blessed. We've got guests for playing at our wedding. Yet they wouldn't let their daughter play that music. And I was like, what's going on there? Because I come from New Zealand, where I was sort of brought up thinking that, you know, I didn't really have any limitations to whatever I wanted to do.
Yeah, everything's life. Open season, right? You know, yeah, if you like something, you can grab it and run with it.
Just do it. Yeah, exactly. So to me, I didn't understand that at first, but now sort of delving into a bit deeper, I understand it. It actually makes the music even cooler for me because my parents are both working class Londoners that came, that emigrated in the 50s. So I was back the underdog, you know? Mm-hmm. So I sort of like that. You know, the fact that it's actually an avenue for people who don't really have a voice in society to have a voice in society, and they do have a lot of power, those women. They play at everybody's weddings. They teach, you know, these rich, you know, Sudanese women's daughters how to dance and behave at their weddings, and the wedding is everything in Sudanese society. So they play a super important role in that society. So and they're businesswomen, and they make so much money, it's ridiculous. But they're singing these songs that they've basically been passed from group to group, and they started in the ghettos of Khartoum, you know.
Mm.
It's choice.
now you sort of, so you've got your blueprint for an idea, and you've worked on it with Devin, and then you've recruited, I guess, a whole lot of like the true emerging talent out of New Zealand. You know, Chelsea Jade, Razor Beza, King's Steer, Jess B, Aradna, and Milo. Mm-hmm. How did when, you know, so you've got your blueprint for the idea, are the songs completely worked out, and then you just get everyone to put together some lyrics over the music, or how did it sort of?
So basically, I wasn't even going to release this music. I just remember standing in that room with those musicians and Khartoum, going, man, I want to hear what that sounds like with a punk rock bass line over the top of it.
Yeah.
And that was literally what I wanted to do, just for my own personal, like, consumption, like as a music fan. So I did that, and then I did that again and again and again, and then I had all this music, and I was like, shit, this is some of the best music I've actually been involved in, you know, the process of writing with, and I really want people to hear it. So, okay, so it sort of started with a total collaborative idea, you know, but sort of from a, almost like a world cultural sort of, you know, viewpoint, you know, jamming with these women who speak a different language than me, and come from a totally different culture than me. And I just thought, well, I've gone this far with the collaborative approach, why don't I just go even further? And I didn't really want to sing on the record. I wanted to hear other people's voices. Initially, my initial idea was like, okay, what if we take this female-only version of the form of music from Sudan and then pair it with some female vocals, you know, vocalists or musicians or producers from New Zealand? And I want to point out the sort of unifying things between the two, you know, actually show that we're not so different, you know, like, and so that was my initial idea. But then it sort of, once that started rolling, it was also like, well, I'd really like to hear what Razor does as well, and I'd really like to hear what King does, and let's just run with that. So it was, yeah, that was my initial idea, was to just be a more female-based thing, and then sort of Kings and Razor sort of happened along the way as well, because and that comes out the fact that while I was making this music in Melbourne, you know, jamming over the top of these Sudanese recordings, all we were listening to was Kendrick Lamar's Pimp a Butterfly and J. Cole's last record, and because for me that's the closest to what I consider rock and roll is, because it's actually the only contemporary form of music that speaks truth to power. And for me, the idea of rock and roll is always the like I sort of talked about before, which is the voice from the suburbs or the voice of the person that shouldn't have a voice in society, but it's their way of having a voice and actually saying the truth and actually having a vehicle to do that, you know, like say things that everyone knows is true, but no one's articulating it, not on a mass scale. So for me, those records were doing that. I don't know, a lot of guitar music hasn't done that for me for a long time, and which is weird because I play in a guitar band, and I try and do that myself. Like I'm pretty happy with how Five Eyes, the last Sheehad album, came out. Pretty angry record, but then I think there's plenty to be angry about, and you know, in the sort of political climate that we're in, and especially for a lefty like myself.
Yeah.
So this was another way. So going back to that, that's why I wanted to work with sort of people from hip hop world, because it was like, well, hip hop's a vehicle to actually speak truth to power in a contemporary musical sort of field. You know, like it seems to be a more effective way of doing it, and you can fucking dance to it on top of it. You know, and that's what I like doing. I do like dancing. You know, like so. And the music, you know, the core of the music, the Sudanese music itself, the Aghani al-Banat, is dance music. So I needed music, contemporary music that ran with that as well, you know?
Okay. I'm slightly curious because obviously you're playing down here in September at the Power Station.
Yes.
What's a live arrangement going to look like for this vehicle?
Basically, I've got a steer. Razor Beza, an amazing guitarist from Christchurch called Emily Browning, who's I think from jazz world really, but she's just awesome, and Ben Lemmy, who's the drummer from Trinity Roots. He also plays in other bands as well, but that's where I saw him play drums, was playing at the Radioactive benefit gig. I saw Trinity Roots play and I thought, wow, that guy is the best drummer I've seen for ages. I'm going to steal him if I get a chance. And I did. So we're going to try, I mean, because of like where that music comes from, it's really, really hard to find Aghani al-Banat players outside of Sudan. And they don't, because of the class they come from, they don't usually travel to the West. So, and I'm not a zillionaire, so I can't really get them down here. So we're going to have to recreate that stuff live. And so we've booked a week in Massey University where I'm doing my master's, and so I get it for cheap because I'm a registered student there. and we're just basically gonna have a play, and we're just gonna set up a whole bunch of instruments and just smack the crap out of them. And then I'm pretty sure that between the talents of the people that I've got, I reckon we're gonna create a really good, amazing live show.
Okay, fantastic. Now I'm curious, of the songs on the record, do you have a particular favorite that you might like us to tell, well, sorry, might like to tell us a bit of background about?
Sure. I mean
I love all of my children equally, but
I'm not gonna say that, but I do think that I managed to distill, you know, about 50 different ideas down into, you know, 8 songs that last for 30 minutes, and it's really a distillation of the whole idea. I think it works really well from start to finish, and that was one of the triumphs for me about that record. But I totally love the way the record starts with Boomtown. Mm-hmm. I think that's like one of the most joyous pieces of like contemporary pop that I've heard for ages, and that's to do with just the nature of the music that I'm playing around, and then on top of it having both Razor and Chelsea just deliver like some awesome like singing and awesome emceeing, and both telling their own story, and for some reason it just works, man. I mean, and I've never written a song in that way that sounds so sort of finished and complete and so joyous. And it's like Chelsea did her vocals in LA, Razor did his in either Hamilton or Auckland. I recorded all the music in Melbourne based around recordings I'd made in Khartoum and Sudan. And in between all that, you just stick it together, and by chance, you've got this great little pop song, you know? And it's just, for me, it's just glorious sounding, you know? and sounds really good loud.
Fantastic, fantastic.